This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching in depth through the book of 1 Corinthians. Today, Pastor Sandy continues his message called When Right Becomes Wrong in 1 Corinthians chapter 9.
He says, he who plows should plow in hope. Even for a pastor, there are times when work feels like work. Why kill a man's financial incentive to do a good job? I sat the elders down and I told them, I said, look, raise my salary if you want, lower my salary if you want, but don't ever put me in a situation where my performance can't do something about my salary. This produces a hopeless pastor. Paul understood the nature of pastors who are men, and what motivates us so often is the ability to earn a good day's pay for a good day's work. Paul says, he who plows should plow in hope. And then he says in verse 11, and if we have sown spiritual things for you, is it a great thing if we reap your material things? Here Paul is capitalizing the important spiritual principle that he's been teaching in these last few verses. If a pastor and the church he serves helps you spiritually, then you ought to support them materially. If a church adds to your life spiritually and builds you up biblically and helps you focus eternally, then it is a minor trade-off for you to help that church pay a few bills. And if this principle applies to pastors, to all pastors, it certainly applied to Paul in his dealings with the Corinthians. For he tells them in verse 12, if others are partakers of this right over you, are we not even more? I mean, like believers today, apparently the Corinthians, they were quick to support the TV preachers who came on the tube and gave the slick presentations, you know, and begged for money. Oh, they were quick to open up their wallet for anybody with a fancy appeal or a sad sob story. But how about the local guy who's in the trenches grinding it out from week to week? The guy they know and that they trust. Here Paul says that if you've given to virtual strangers, how much more should they have given to him? He had planted this church. He had been with them on site, working alongside them for 18 months. He was even helping them at the moment, sort out their problems, work through their difficulties. Paul deserved their support more than anyone. And yet he writes, nevertheless, we have not used this right, but endure all things, lest we hinder the gospel of Christ. And here is his main point. Not that he wanted more money, but that he was willing to forego the money for the sake of the gospel. Even though Paul had rights and privileges of an apostle, he didn't use them. Yes, he founded this church. Yes, he labored in this church. Yes, he was due a salary, probably even a vacation in a 401k. But Paul laid aside what he was entitled to so that no one would ever accuse him of selfish motives. More important to Paul than adequate compensation was the reputation of Christianity and the furtherance of the gospel. Paul didn't want to give anyone any reason to question his love for Jesus and his love for the church. Paul didn't want anyone to say, ah, that Paul, he's only in it for the money. Or, hey, don't go to that church. Don't go to the church in Corinth. All they care about is your money. Again, Paul was not opposed to taking a paycheck for his work in the ministry. As he explained, it was his right. And he accepted financial support from other churches, just not while he was in Corinth. It must have been something about what had happened there. Perhaps some crooked clergy had previously worked the city, sort of built the saints out of their money. Many of the Corinthians had been burned financially and were now suspicious. And so Paul adapted his approach to the needs of the people he wanted to reach. In Corinth, he needed to prove to these folks that he cared for their soul, not their money. And if that took Paul making tents for a time, so be it. I want you to know that a similar concern guides our approach to money here at Calvary Chapel. I hope you know your church does have financial needs. Don't think Walton EMC donates the electricity. or that Pastor Matt plays for free. Of course, knowing Pastor Matt, he'd probably play for free if we told him it was for the gospel's sake. But we need to pay him. And Jenny always appreciates it when we do. But here's the decision that we have made as a church. We have deliberately chosen to low-key our appeals for funds and trust the Lord to provide what we need. And are there times when I'm tempted to be more bold in encouraging you to give? Of course there are. And I think I would be well within my right to stress the biblical emphasis to give. Yet for 35 years, we have for the most part waived that right because we realized how often the subject of money gets abused in churches today. Who hasn't been to a church and at some point felt manipulated? That's why for the sake of the gospel, at Calvary Chapel, we try to temper our appeals. Some Sundays, we don't even mention to you that there's an offering box. We prefer it when people come up and ask how they can give. We just want to prove to people that this church and its leaders exist for them, not the other way around. And we believe that if we're faithful to the ministry God gives us, then God is going to take care of our financial needs. We might even be able to pay Pastor Matt this week. Again, verse 13 makes clear that a pastor is justified in drawing a salary. He says, "Do you not know that those who minister the holy things eat of the things of the temple, and those who serve at the altar partake of the offerings of the altar?" Paul here is referring to the Old Testament temple. And when the Old Testament worshiper brought his animal to the temple, the priest who administered the sacrifice would take a choice of the take a choice cut of the best beef. The priests were paid in beef. The Old Testament priest, in other words, was supported by the worshipers. And he says, "Even so, the Lord has commanded that those who preach the gospel should live from the gospel." And what was true of the Old Testament priest should be true of the New Testament pastors. Pay them out of the offerings given to God. But Paul writes in verse 15, "I have used none of these things, nor have I written these things that it should be done so to me, for it would be better for me to die than that anyone should make my boasting void." Paul shudders the thought of anyone labeling him a money-hungry preacher. Notice his intensity here. He would rather die than bring shame on the ministry or give someone a reason to question his motives. It reminds me of Billy Graham early in his ministry. In fact, it was after a crusade here in Atlanta. The newspaper ran a photo of Billy leaving the stadium with bags of money in his hands. Billy was innocent of any wrongdoing. In fact, he just got stuck with making the deposit that day, but it looked really bad. And from that day forward, Billy Graham separated himself from the money. He put himself on a modest salary. He set up strict guidelines for how others in the ministry should handle the finances. He wanted everything to be above board. He eliminated any appearance of impropriety. This was Paul's attitude toward ministry. And this is the attitude that I have sought to maintain in the lifestyle that I live, in the types of clothes that I wear, or the car that I drive, or in the movies that I watch. There are activities and privileges that I could justify as my right or my liberty to engage in, but I don't. I refrain for the gospel's sake. There was a time when one of my responsibilities was to mow the church lawn. I'd be pushing the mower around on a hot, blistering July afternoon, the temperature hovering in the high 90s, sweating profusely, perspiration pouring off my body. And my temptation was to pull off my shirt. I was free to peel off my shirt, but I didn't, for it hit me. What if one of the sisters in the church drives by and sees my bulging muscles and my irresistible body and starts thinking the wrong thoughts? And for the sake of the church, for the gospel, for the cause of Christ, I curtailed my liberty to keep the ladies from stumbling. I mentioned it as a Christian. I have the freedom to drink a glass of wine with my meal. But as a leader in the church, why would I? Why would I even go there? Oh, yeah, Pastor Sandy, European Christians, they drink wine all the time. Well, I don't live in Europe. If I drank wine all the time, I might be European too. But that's another thing. But I live in America. And it's estimated that in America, 16% of the population has a chemical propensity toward alcohol. Do you know that? 16% have a chemical dependence on alcohol. They have the potential of being alcoholics. That's one in every six people I meet. Every sixth person I meet has a potential problem with alcohol. Now, how could a pastor drinking not be a stumbling block to someone? And I'm sure 99.9% of the population has a friend or a family member who has been some way harmed by alcohol. Why would a pastor take what is a liability to so many and insist on it as a liberty for himself? Again, Paul tells us, it would be better for me to die than that anyone should make my boasting void. And Paul's boast was his sincerity toward the gospel. The apostle wasn't out to serve himself. His ministry had no ulterior motives. His sole ambition was for God to be glorified and for lost people to be saved. And Paul's goal was to avoid anything that could hinder someone from hearing and receiving God's good news. He writes in verse 16, "For if I preach the gospel, I have nothing to boast of. For necessity is laid upon me. Yes, woe is me if I do not preach the gospel." Being a pastor, preaching the gospel, wasn't just a career move for Paul. He didn't get the idea of being a pastor by talking to a career counselor or by browsing a brochure on potentials in apostleship. God called this man. God put a burden on his heart that he couldn't shake. He writes, "Woe is me if I do not preach the gospel." It wasn't Paul's choice. It was God's calling. When a young man approaches me about becoming a pastor, I always tell him, if you can do anything else other than pastor and be happy doing it, then don't pastor. Being a pastor, preaching the gospel, isn't just a job. Paul said it was laid on him of necessity. It was a passion, a calling. It was a mission from God. Paul was a talented man, and I'm sure he would have been successful at whatever he did in life. But satisfied? I doubt it. For God called him to preach the gospel, and he would be happy doing nothing less. Paul says in verse 17, "For if I do this willingly, I have a reward. But if against my will, I have been entrusted with a stewardship." If Paul's ministry had been a job, he would have received wages, a reward. But it wasn't a job. It was a stewardship. It was a God-given responsibility. He says, "What is my reward then?" So what does Paul expect from the ministry? What is his takeaway? He answers that when I preach the gospel, I may present the gospel of Christ without charge, that I may not abuse my authority in the gospel. Paul's reward was for the opportunity to conduct his ministry with high integrity, with charity, and with purity toward Christ and toward the gospel. In short, the ministry wasn't a paycheck to Paul. His goal was an eternal reward, the glory of God and the souls of men. God had put it in his heart to be a minister. Once I watched a television special on professional basketball. It was entitled, "The First 50 Years of the NBA. One of the old-timers in the special made the comment, "The team owners were the dumbest people on earth. They paid us a salary, but they didn't have to. We would have played for free." They played for the love of the game. And this was Paul. He preached for the love of the gospel. He said, "Woe is me if I do not preach the gospel." And this is why I teach God's word. Now, don't misunderstand. I appreciate my salary. Kathy does too. And rather than dumb, you are being biblical and prudent for paying your pastor. But I've said before, if you didn't pay me to pastor, I'd pay you to let me. Pastor is the most demanding, taxing, challenging, intense job I know, but I wouldn't trade it for any other job in the world. I thank God daily for the opportunity to communicate His word and to pastor His people. Paul could have lived a carefree life. He could have fabricated tents full time. How easy would that have been? Owned a wealthy business. Instead, he signed on for the toughest job on earth. He says in verse 19, "For though I am free from all men, I have made myself a servant to all, that I might win the more." Now, Paul's freedom in Christ was so far-reaching. He was free from the law. He was free to eat meat. He was free from the desire for special treatment. He was free from money. And he was also free from the opinions of men. In a sense, Paul didn't care one iota what people thought of him. The newspapers, those bloggers, they could write what they wanted. It didn't matter to Paul. He didn't live for man's approval. He was free from all men. But he did care deeply for what people thought of Jesus and the gospel. So much so that Paul made himself a servant to all lost men to share with them the gospel. Thus, he was always building bridges and earning the right to preach and building platforms for the gospel. See, it really bothers me when I run into Christians, even leaders, who have the cavalier attitude, "Well, who cares what people think, what they say about me? I just want to serve God. That's all that matters to me. I'm free from what other people think." Paul, too, is free from all men. But then he tells us, "I have made myself a servant to all that I might win the more." He realized that for the gospel's sake, his reputation was important. It should matter to him what other people think about him. For how other people saw him would determine their willingness to look into the gospel he preached. If they respected Paul, then they would want to know what made him tick. And this would open doors for a witness. See, Paul could have bulldozed through life with his head down, unconcerned about public opinion. But Paul realized that spreading the gospel is a people business, and it matters what people think about the preacher. Disrespect the messenger, and it's easier to reject the message. Only the foolish pastor is oblivious to what people think about him. He desires a good reputation. Well, Paul elaborates on what this means to be a servant to people in verse 20. He says, "And to the Jews I became as a Jew, that I might win Jews." When Paul preached the gospel, he understood who his audience was. Now, he never tinkered with the message, but he tailored his methods to the culture of the people to whom he spoke. When his audience was Jewish, he wore his little yarmulke, and he ate kosher, and he didn't work on the Sabbath. When your goal is delivering the gospel, it's not the time to flaunt your freedom or to try to prove a point. A lost soul needs Jesus. The goal is to find common ground. He says, "To those who are under the law, as under the law, that I might win those who are under the law. To those who are without law, as without law. Not being without law toward God, but under law toward Christ, that I might win those who are without law." When Paul preached to the Jew, he came as a Jew. But when he preached to the Gentiles, he ordered a pork barbecue sandwich. Rather than a yarmulke, he probably wore his Roman toga. He fit in so he could speak out. He used his freedom, not for his own selfish enjoyment, but to be a more effective witness for Jesus and a minister of the gospel. Paul was always faithful, but he was also flexible. He even says, "To the weak, I became as weak, that I might win the weak." If it took becoming poor to win the poor to Jesus, Paul would sell all his belongings. He didn't care. If it took being weak to win the weak, he would fast for 3 weeks and put himself in a diminished state, if that's what it took to convince someone of the gospel. You see, culturally speaking, not morally, not spiritually, but culturally, there was nothing that Paul wouldn't do to reach folks with the gospel. There wasn't a single liberty he wasn't willing to forfeit if he could reach someone for Christ. Imagine if Paul knew that donning a gold and navy sweatshirt and cheering for the rambling wreck would win someone to Christ, he'd do it. That's amazing. Paul would give up anything for Christ. He says, I have become all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. Now, certainly God can surprise us. But it is most likely that it's the biker who will lead the other biker to Jesus. It is the housewife who will win the housewife. It's the golfer who will win the other golfer. It's the salesman who will lead his fellow salesman to Christ. Paul never compromised morally or spiritually or biblically, but he did adapt culturally to folks that he wanted to reach. He found common ground, and he built a bridge for the sake of the gospel. You know, traditionally, the church approaches the surrounding culture in one of two ways, either isolation or imitation. Either we isolate from our surrounding society, we hide ourselves, we refuse to get out among others, or we imitate the society and we compromise and we lose our distinctiveness. God doesn't want us to do either. There is a third option, infiltrate. This is what Paul did. He took the distinctives of a Christian and he became all things to all men. He related culturally to the people where they were at so he could bring them to where they needed to be into saving faith in Jesus. You know, over the years, we've battled with this in our own church. We have people who come in with a certain cultural mindset and they don't understand the bigger picture. Over the years, we've had some church folk complain about our music. Oh man, I don't like that rock and roll music. I can't stand the rock and roll music. You guys need to sing some hymns. But then the same people would grumble if we had a lack of young people in our church. Hey, you can't have it both ways. What do you want? A cozy atmosphere for the dignified and the sanctified? Or do you want a place that's inviting and relatable to modern, to a modern environment and to the modern people that are around us in which we live? An expert on evangelism, Donald McGravin, he once said, "The world has more winnable people than ever before, but it's possible to come out of a ripe field empty-handed." And that is what's happening in so many churches today. Our world is hungry for the good news, but the church doesn't always present it in a compelling way. When Hudson Taylor landed in mainland China, he struggled in his efforts to spread the gospel. One day the Lord told him to give up his Western clothes and customs, to dress like the Chinese. He even cut his hair. Sadly, this offended his fellow missionaries, and it drew their sharp criticism. But it built a bridge to the locals that yielded a great spiritual harvest. Hudson Taylor didn't go to China to reach other missionaries. I love what the founder of the Salvation Army, William Booth, once said. "I would stand on my head and play a tambourine with my feet if I thought it would help me win one lost soul to Jesus." That is exactly how I feel. I'll try anything other than sin if it helped me to reach one person for Jesus Christ. I'm telling you the truth. I'd even cheer for Georgia Tech. Well, maybe. Paul closes this section. "Now this I do for the gospel's sake, that I may be partaker of it with you." Paul had become like a Corinthian to win the Corinthians. See, Corinth was the home of the Isthmian Games, a sporting contest second only to the ancient Olympics. The Corinthians were sports enthusiasts, and it is the fan that reaches the fan. And that's why he finishes up chapter 9 by using a sports analogy. He compares the Christian life to an athlete's training and mentality.
Being on the go is something we're all accustomed to in this culture. The hustle and bustle of life seems to make the days just fly by. For most of us, our smartphones are sort of an extension of our bodies, constantly ringing and dinging, telling us where to be and what the next appointment is. The technology that we enjoy in this day and age is amazing. And while there's certainly no end to the bad things we can find online and through our smartphones, there's also some great kingdom-minded options. We'd like to invite you to download the Sandy Adams mobile app. Our mobile app is available for iPhone, Android, and Windows smartphones. Or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the link from the main menu. When you download the app, you'll be able to listen to the most recent messages taught by Pastor Sandy, browse the series archive, and search the archive alphabetically. Finally, when you download the mobile app, you'll also have the opportunity to join us live for our Sunday morning worship service right from your smartphone. Again, to download the Sandy Adams mobile app, simply enter Sandy Adams in the search options of your smartphone's app store, or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the mobile app option right on the homepage. And please join us again as Pastor Sandy continues teaching through the Bible right here on Sandy Adams Radio.